Welt im Ohr. Ein Beitrag für internationale Entwicklungszusammenarbeit. Herzlich willkommen hier bei Welt im Ohr. Mein Name ist Mayada Hadayo. Wir haben heute etwas Besonderes vorbereitet, nämlich das APEAR-Jubiläum 10 plus 2. APEAR ist das österreichische Hochschulkooperationsprogramm, gefördert aus Mitteln der österreichischen Entwicklungszusammenarbeit und im ÖAD umgesetzt. Diese Sendung heute ist im Zeichen eines Jubiläums. APEAR feiert heuer 10 plus 2 Jahre, 12-jähriges Jubiläum. Der runde Geburtstag musste aufgrund der Pandemie wie so vieles bereits zweimal verschoben werden. Aber dieses Jahr feiert das Programm und die Menschen dahinter sowohl das 12-jährige Bestehen als auch eine dritte Programmphase bis 2027.
Dear guests, please come in so that we can start. The ululation that you just heard is something we typically do in some African countries when there is a celebration. And today there is a lot of cause for celebration. Dear esteemed guests, ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to this special event. On the 24th of March 2010, the APEAR program was launched. APEAR, in case you didn't know, stands for the Austrian Partnership Program in Higher Education and Research for Development. It is a higher learning cooperation program funded by the Austrian Development Agency and implemented by the Agency for Education and Internationalization, ÖAD. Today we proudly celebrate this anniversary, 10th anniversary, plus 2 years. And my name is Stella Asimwe. I am very pleased to take you through the evening. We start with some interesting speeches and we'll have some musical interludes as well. Let's now officially open our festivities by inviting the CEOs of both organizations that carry the APEAR program, and that is Dr. Jakob Kalitsche from ÖAD, as well as Ambassador Dr. Friedrich Stift, the Managing Director of the Austrian Development Agency. Dr. Kalitsche, please.
It's never too late for a good party, I guess. Dear Ambassador Stift, dear members of the APEAR Advisory Board, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this decade plus 2 years APEAR birthday bash. When APEAR was invented more than a decade ago. ERD was able to make use of its core expertise and competences we had acquired for many, many, many years. We celebrated 60 years of ERD last year. And what's this core competence? It's supporting foreign students, also from developing countries, of course. Now, back then, already when a peer was invented, it had much more on offer, of course, than scholarships and bringing people to Austria. Two-thirds of the direct peer funds flow into research and teaching cooperation between Austrian higher education and research institutions, as well as institutions in the priority countries of the Austrian Development Cooperation. And with this focus, Austria, for the first time, actually had a strategic instrument to systematically anchor the concerns of development research in the Austrian higher education and research sector to develop evidence-based solutions for the gradual realization of the SDGs in cooperation projects with our partners. For as you will all be aware, ERD is not a program for theoretical analysis and basic research, but of very practical issues that aim at improving the living conditions of many people in structurally weak regions. And for this strategic farsightedness, I would like to thank the Austrian Development Agency. I would like to thank the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And I would also like to thank the advisory board and everyone really who put an effort into developing and the development of this program. Also for us, for ERD, this program very much broadened our scope as an organization. I think this is one of the reasons why we were able to really develop a competence center for questions concerning development research, funding of development research here in Austria. One of the reasons. Another one, I think, is the high expertise and the big effort of Andreas Obrecht and his whole team. Thank you for your work and your engagement for this cause. It's your team that has turned a peer into a thriving program together with our partners. It's also you now and your team that makes use of the contacts and the expertise gained through the peer program by setting up additionally complementary activities such as the Africa Uninet with its 60 African partner that we founded 2 years ago, or by making more use, for example, of the Erasmus Plus program that has so many new possibilities for students and staff mobility since the new program period started 2 years ago. So it doesn't really surprise me at all that in the evaluation of the peer program, the executive summary mentions that the program is highly relevant at both the international and the Austrian level, since it is aligned with international and Austrian frameworks and strategies in the area of scientific cooperation and development. Ladies and gentlemen, in this spirit, thank you for making all of this possible. And I wish ERD further successful years and now a nice party tonight. Thank you.
Last year, the third phase of the ERD program was launched. And this is very, very great news, which we will hear about much later. But for now, I invite Dr. Friedrich Stift to say a few words to us.
I would like to thank you for the kind invitation celebrating 12 years of ERD. My thanks go to the members of the ERD Advisory Board, ERD Project Partner representatives, colleagues from ERD and ADA, representatives of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of Education, and everyone who finds interest in the work of ERD. 10 plus 2, this equals 12 years of success, and we are not done yet. In 2007, the education programs of the Austrian Development Cooperation were evaluated. Based on the recommendations of this evaluation, the Austrian Development Cooperation came out with a strategy for higher education and scientific cooperation. This strategy put strong emphasis on institutional capacity building of higher education institutions in partner countries and was the basis and starting point for ERD. Is the global community going to meet the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030? I certainly hope so, despite of all odds. Back in 2020, when we started making plans for this event, we could not claim that the world was on track to achieve the SDGs. Since then, We had the plus 2 years of 2021 and 2022, which brought waves of COVID, the war in Ukraine, and all the terrible global consequences. In 2019, an independent group of scientists appointed by the UN Secretary General came out with the first global sustainable development report. It was titled, "The Future is Now, Science for Achieving Sustainable Development." Some of the key takeaways of the report are: science is our great ally and the main lever for achieving the SDGs. Science diplomacy, which is in its basic form is scientific collaboration among nations to address common problems, is one of the best vehicles we have to improve the management of global environmental commons. But significant gaps remain for bridging the scientific and technological divide between developed and developing countries. Therefore, facilitating multidirectional science and technology transfer is required to achieve the 2030 agenda targets. 2 years later, in 2021, the UNESCO Global Science Report came out. The report shows that, encouragingly, scientific publishing grew strongest for low- and middle-income countries. However, in terms of global research funding, 90% comes from G20 nations. Of concern are that the highest share of global science publications between 2012 and 2019 is on artificial intelligence, while scientific publications on SDG-related sustainability science make only a fraction of that. Global funding is now weakest on the topic of core environmental SDGs, like SDG 13, climate action, SDG 14, on life underwater, and SDG 15, life on land. Consequently, the global number of publications lags behind on these topics, and only 33% of scientists globally are women. What we learn from these reports concurs with our observation after 12 years of a peer. We need more SDG progress, and for that, we need more SDG-related science. We need more science collaboration between the global north and the global south. We need more women in science. We need more scholarships to get disadvantaged groups into science. Above all, we need more science that gets translated first into policy and then into action, to accelerate the transformation that people and the planet need. My poignant conclusion is that we are not done yet, and that the world should have many more programs like APEAR. Thank you for the attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stift. We will now have a musical interlude. This trio has been put together especially for this event. We have on the fretless guitar, that is Mahan Mirarab, Savin Hazin, also from Iran, playing a traditional instrument, that is the Kamanche. Last but not least is Jakali Kone. He comes from Burkina Faso and plays many instruments. Today we have the opportunity to hear the kora, the djembe, and the belafon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was indeed quite beautiful. We do not have enough time today to talk about the complexity of the APEA program, but still we would like to talk about some aspects, for example, how submitted projects are chosen, are selected. First, you need an international peer reviewing process where experts from all over the world evaluate the quality of the projects. Then you need a selection board, which also consists of international experts, and which then makes the selection based on the peer reviewing process. And last but not least, you need the selection board and the advisory board, an important body that discusses the strategic issues and keeps an overview of the program activities, which means we shall now hear from Hannah Akufo, who comes from Ghana and has been on this advisory board right from the get-go. You're welcome, Hannah.
When I look around, it's so touching to see so many people and how this program has developed over the period I've been involved in it, and the enthusiasm one sees from those of you involved in the program is touching. The reason why I find peer and such other research capacity strengthening programs so important is that without such programs, the idea of low-income countries being able to either catch up or to be able to ask their own question, have their own ideas, and to be able to have the mechanism to ask the questions and to carry it out, it's not so easy. And programs like APEAR have facilitated this process. But I think the idea of individual research capacity strengthening, of course, is important, but when it is institutionalized, then there is a possibility for it to flourish with time. Of course, in the end, it is up to countries to be responsible for this kind of support. But programs like APEAR or all these other different programs that have recently come up, to have the individuals who will make this their profession, because often in a number of African universities that I've been involved with, research has not been lifted to the level that it ought to be done. Anyway, so when some years ago, my late head of department, Berit Olsen, said she was Mrs. Capacity Building. And she said, oh, there's a new program APEAR coming up, and I think that you could join and make some input to it. And the interesting thing is that when you join a program that other people have thought about, perhaps in the first instance you think, they're not doing as we are doing. But that's not what it should be about. It's to find different modalities to be able to support institutions to be what they want to be. And I have learned a lot from this program. It's not just like CEDA works, but it also gives ideas how to do things differently. And it was a little bit of a steep curve when I started being on the APEAR board, because there's things that I didn't understand about the Austrian way of doing. But one of the things that I've become very convinced about is that if funding institutions want to support research in African institutions, it has to be done in a somehow collaborative way so that the institutions are not torn apart in some way. And also, if the institutions are allowed to say what they want through writing their own concept notes and being able to say, this is what's important for us at this time, and for the funding agencies to be able to take this seriously. I could elaborate on that, but I think we want to eat at some point. And the environment within the institution, and most of the time when I talk about institutions, usually universities, is so critical that as funding agencies, we should not be in competition with each other. and neither should the people we support think in this way. So I think that a program like APEAR touches my heart. I think it started a little bit small and has developed to what we are seeing now. And I'm just privileged to be told that I can continue to be part of the advisory board, because now that I'm retired, I'll have a lot to say. And thank you all very much.
Thank you very much, Hannah Okufo. Many things I have learned about you this evening are that, yes, you come from Ghana, and that among other things, you were the chairperson of the governing organ of the Tropical Disease Research and Training Program. I think it was from the UNDP and WHO, yes? And that you're an affiliated professor at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and an honorary doctor of science of Makerere University, Uganda. And that you're very passionate about capacity building and pushing people to be innovative. Thank you very much. APEAR is a practice and solution-oriented program with the goal of improving living conditions of people in marginalized countries and regions that are weak in infrastructure, but all within the framework of the Sustainable Development Goals, of course, with the primary focus being poverty reduction, which means that this program touches a lot of lives. It touches the lives of the people who are involved in teaching and doing the scientific work, as well as the people who gain, who reap, so to speak, the results of this scientific work. All these diverse efforts that have been made during the APEAR project have been documented in two books. That means all the results from the last 10 plus 2 years have been documented in two different books, the second volume having just been published. And it was edited by Andreas Obrecht, who is also the head of the APEAR team at the ÖRD. Andreas Obrecht is a social and cultural anthropologist. He is an habilitated sociologist. He's taught at very many different universities before his engagement with the APEAR project, and has done a lot of research in the field of development studies in the South Pacific, in African countries, and finally in some Asian countries. I now invite you, dear Andreas, to talk about this publication.
Thank you very much, Stella. Dear ladies and gentlemen, dear honorable members of the APEAR Advisory Board, dear project partners, dear ambassadors, dear colleagues, and dear friends, a warm welcome on behalf of the APEAR team. And let me take the opportunity to start by saying something about the team. This, what I want to say, can be summed up in a single sentence. The APEAR team is simply the best. And therefore, it is also the best team I have ever worked with. Why is that so? What is the cause for that? It is very simple to explain. The APEAR team consists of extremely bright, charming, friendly, and nice people who combine a high scientific and academic qualification and an expertise in development research with a strong commitment to development policy issues. And the team acts very flexible and always solution-oriented, which is very important in the field of development research. There's another thing. The people in the team, they have a very good sense of humor. They carry a smile on their faces each day, although not every day can be sunny. And I have the big honor to lead this team from the very beginning of the APEAR program. And I really want to thank from the deep bottom of my heart that I could work with you, all of you, so long, and that we reached many of the ambitious goals 10 plus 2 years ago, the goals we have sorted out and carried out together with the Austrian Development Agency. The major objective of APEA is to support, to encourage mutual collaboration between Austrian researchers, Austrian higher education institutions and universities and scientific institutions in our partner countries and in our key regions. And one, the achievement was made possible not only by the team, but also by the many project partners, by the many people working in the countries together with Austrian scientists who make these goals coming to reality. APEA has set itself always very ambitious goals. And I can remember very well the kickoff meeting 12 years ago at the Albert Schweitzer House in the 9th district. And I also can remember what I said at this outstanding evening when I was asked. I said, when I was a young development researcher, I wished there was a program like APEA, but there was no program like APEA. Then I said, yes, but it's never too late to start the important things in life. 30 years ago, development research was not such an important tool. And nowadays, we can say that it is one of the most important tools to face the global challenges and to contribute to the realization of the SDGs. The achievements and some of the goals there are also documented in two books. The second one has been published in this print edition and also open access. We encouraged 105 authors to take part, to make their contributions and to write about problems, about methodological, theoretical approaches, also empirical approaches, how to generate transcultural and transdisciplinary knowledge. For me as editor, it was very important to encourage our authors to write in a way that differs from conventional research reports. For me, it was important that the people were also writing about their individual learning processes during the research phase. And I would like to thank all the authors of the book for the enormous effort and also the self-critical perspectives they brought in. These books are part of APEA's public relations. In addition to lectures, to webinars, to workshops, to annual film days, in addition to events for our students, the achievements and the program and the projects have also been documented in radio broadcasts, more or less from the beginning on. We have a collaboration with Campus Radio, Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, and it is incredible, unbelievable, but it is true. You will find an audio archive with 212 podcasts, radio shows with development-related content, APEA content. Welt im Ohr, this is the name, or this is the title of the series. Ladies and gentlemen, finally, I want to touch a topic that is of really great concern to all of us. The world has become more unsafe, more insecure, more unpredictable. And this not only because of the consequences of climate change, not only because of the consequences of COVID-19, but also because of the terrible war of aggression in the Ukraine, a war that shocks us deeply. But even before the war in the Ukraine started, there was systematic destabilization going on in many parts of our world, and also APEA regions and APEA countries where have been and are still affected by these kind of political destabilization. I give an example. Burkina Faso was more or less a stable, a peaceful, somehow a democratic country. Nowadays, the military is ruling and the north is systematically destabilized by Islamist groups and armed forces. Or in Ethiopia, we have realized most of our academic partnerships and the terrible civil war break out and shaken the people. Also, the war in Ngoro-Karabakh, in Berg-Karabakh, in Armenia, had some influence on our projects there. Or we look the Gaza Strip, the Palestinian territories are not calming down. In the Gaza Strip, we only could finalize our appeal projects under major restrictions. And our colleagues in Moldova, they do worry a lot about their future in view of the terrible things and the violence going on in the Ukraine. Yes, the world has become more unsafe, more unpredictable, but we must not be intimidated. We have to face the challenges. Poverty and violence, they are consequences of wrong, of misguided and misleaded developments. In order to correct this, we have to build more than ever before cooperative networks to promote a more sustainable future. More than ever before, we are called upon to act, to react, to think, to create visions, and to do research together. To build a sustainable future in which peace, democracy, and life in human dignity can be realized for all. In this spirit, thank you very much for your attention and have a nice and inspiring evening.
Thank you very much, Andreas Olbrecht. I would like to mention that the PEER program, this Higher Learning Cooperation program, has salient parts that include gender sensitivity, inclusion, and of course following the motto of the Sustainable Development Goals, leave no one behind. So one project documented in the books that you've just showed us specifically addresses the integration of disabled people into the tertiary education sector in Ethiopia and in Austria. Michelle Proyer is one person that has been involved in this project and has also written two articles in this book together with Ethiopian and Austrian colleagues. Please, you're welcome to speak to us. Michelle Proyer holds a professorship for inclusive education at the Center for Teacher Education and Department of Education at the University of Vienna. So she will now tell us about the highlights, I guess, and challenges of INEDIS.
Thank you very much and good evening to everyone. I feel really honored that I have been invited to share my thoughts and ideas and experiences, but me standing here is also due to the fact that a couple of other people cannot stand here because they are in either other places or cannot join us because they are, as you mentioned before, actually also in precarious situations at the moment. So my thoughts also go out to our colleagues in Ethiopia at the moment. I think it has to be underlined that this program up here was one of the first chances for many of us emerging researchers to engage beyond the borders. And it has been said already, the borders are really manifest at the moment. It has been an opportunity for us to really move beyond these borders, moving beyond collaboration also far away from Europe. And many of us on the Austrian side had been involved in working with NGOs. We had been traveling a lot. We had a lot of experiences and vice versa. So many of our colleagues had been to different places. So the Ethiopian partners had seen many places of Europe and they had been traveling and had had a lot of experiences. But when it came to collaboration on a higher education level and academic level, I think everybody was like really, wow, okay, that's a new experience. So let's look into that. So I'm really thankful for that experience also. And I got to know a lot of very interesting people, which I'm really thankful for. Another thing that I have to say is that some funding agencies can be a pain in the neck. And that's, again, and a thing that I cannot say for a peer, but the opposite is true. So it's always a good sign when Andreas calls, and I cannot say that of many people. And he also gave me a call a couple of days ago, and he said, well, you know, take it easy and just be your own little self, which I'm going to try now. I'm not sure if it's a good idea, but you can tell me later. I'm really excited also to be part of the book, and honestly speaking, I think the book was also, again, a test to our collaboration, as many things were. And I think the title is really well put, and I'm not saying that because I want to leave an impression here, but, you know, I think it's really well chosen, because this transnational aspect and the transcultural aspect points to something that I think we sometimes forget in these North-South collaborations, because there's also this aspect about learning within our own countries and learning within our own institutions, and this is why I'm really happy about the title, actually. So in its original meaning, transcultural also points towards aspects not only beyond, but also within cultures and contexts, and I think that is really, really important to point out. And I think it really suits a peer really, really well, because we're learning so many things about each other, not only across borders of countries. So it's really interesting that also what we're addressing in the book is that during our collaboration, we were constantly asking each other these questions about, can we actually do that in Ethiopia? Can we actually ask our colleagues that? Can we actually try? And it was really interesting because we only asked these questions while we were in Austria. As soon as we touched ground in Ethiopia, it was always the opposite. We just did, we just asked, we just interacted, and it was never a problem. I'm really grateful that I met especially one partner in Ethiopia. She really impressed me, and she is a great role model to this stage, actually. And to this date, so Yirga from Addis Ababa University is such a strong woman, and she always influences me. These collaborative aspects also have to be mentioned. And for me, she is really that strong role model within academia, struggling to go through that hierarchical and also patriarchal system, at least in some layers and some aspects of this institution. Another thing, and I think this has already been addressed by Andreas beforehand, is that we also wondered, and we keep on wondering, how students with disabilities make ends meet, and we have learned a lot about these two different country contexts. And it's really interesting and heartwarming, actually, to see how many people are supporting that group. And it's also really, really interesting to see how similar also our reasons to do that are, regardless of which country we are talking about. What caused some severe cuts in our collaboration is the digital gap. These are just some examples of how colorful the APEAR bouquet, as I wanted to call it, of experiences was with the projects Responder and Inedis. Coming to an end, I can say that APEAR has really shaped my research profiles in ways that not many programs can, and I think the same holds true for many of the colleagues I've encountered along the way, from Austria, from Ethiopia, and also from many other places, because we had so many opportunities also to engage in workshops and talk to colleagues from other projects. And I think this was also really engaging and really helpful also for us, also project leaders and collaboration partners. So that was really, really great. And my last sentence is, thank you very much, APEAR. Happy birthday. Hope you will live to see us through current struggles and inequalities to another 10 plus 2 years or more.
Thank you very much, Michelle Breuer. I think after those words, we deserve another short music. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Pamela Burger. She works at the University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna and has worked together with BOKU, that's the University of Applied Life Sciences, and three universities in Burkina Faso, which she will tell us about when she talks about this very interesting article that she wrote with a telling title, The Best Bulls for Burkina Faso. Pamela Burger, where are you hiding? Ah, there you are. Tell us about the best bulls.
Thank you very much for this nice introduction. Thank you. Dear ladies and gentlemen, dear guests of honors, dear absolutely amazing APEAR team, dear Andreas, it's a great honor to present our project today at this occasion of the APEAR celebration. Local cattle breeds of Burkina Faso. You must imagine here, I'm standing in front of, on behalf of our amazing local breed team, you must imagine 18 people behind me here, 6 female scientists and 12 male scientists from 3 universities in Burkina Faso, and of course the Austrian universities. I want to take you now with me in spirit to West Africa, to a region called Gawa, which is in the southwest of Burkina Faso, close to the border of the Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, and also to Ghana. And Burkina Faso has 21 million inhabitants, and the largest ethnic group are the Mossi people. And they started settling the area already from the 11th century onwards. And I also want to highlight two other ethnic groups, the Lobi and the migratory Fulani, because they were the important groups with whom we worked also during our project. There are more than 60 recognized languages in Burkina Faso, and the main one is Moré. And why I'm telling you this is because the name Burkina comes from Moré language and means upright, while Faso comes from the Jula language and means fatherland or father's house. And the Burkinabé people, the Bé suffix, comes from the Fula language and means women or men. So put together, it means Burkina Faso or Burkinabé, land of the honest men and women, which actually should be eponymous. But as you have been hearing also from Andreas, there are problems in the country, and at the beginning of this year, there has been a military coup, and also now in the north of Burkina Faso, there is actually now a military zone built where people are evacuated into the south. So there is 1 million of migrants and refugees within Burkina Faso at the moment. Moving to the natural resources, in Burkina Faso we have a variety of natural resources with the semi-arid Sahelian north and the sub-humid south. And this leads me already in the middle of our project description. And there are about 8.5 million cattle there, with a comparatively large and strong indice in the Sebu cattle with the hump in the north, and the very small towering cattle called Lobi or Baule. And we had 101 farmers involved in this community-based breeding program. And now I want to give you information about our challenges. And this is the perception of our colleague from Burkina Faso, Dominique. So he called it from cattle keepers to cattle breeders, the steps of a transition. In the developing countries, usually the smallholder farmers are usually livestock keepers, but not breeders. So one of the main challenges was to raise the awareness for selecting the best bulls. The commitment of our students, of the project team, and the regular trainings with the farmers, they helped that the farmers could then finally commit also to the breeding programs. In this context, I also want to raise the question, is knowledge created where knowledge is really needed? So do we support, give the support which is really needed there, or do we create something artificial? So this can be summarized best with the statements of the farmers. We developed from cattle keepers to cattle breeders. We gained knowledge. According to my opinion, a great project is built, of course, around innovative ideas, state-of-the-art methods, excellent facilities, and good infrastructure. But its success stands or falls with the people working together. And we really had a multi-ethnic, multinational team with students, practitioners, scientists in the different fields of social and natural sciences, agriculture, animal breeding, ethno-veterinary medicine, ethno-botanic, nutrition and economy. only towards the end of the project, of course, during the COVID pandemic, we were not able to make our last field trip. Our students were not able to celebrate. There was no farewell party. So that was a little bit sad. But the project achievements were absolutely remarkable in terms of capacity building with 5 master students, 4 PhD students, a lot of scientific papers published, conference contributions, and also workshops with the farmers. So now there is a wealth of data and a strong network and to build on. And we had also trust now from the farmers. They told us the last time we were there, where actually there was already political instabilities. They said, wow, there are not any more any white people coming any longer to Burkina Faso. So we see that you are really dedicated to this project. So thank you. So now we can go into the next project phase. So with these projects, Local Breed, we hope to contribute to healthy and well-managed livestock in Burkina Faso for a sustainable development and economic and social peace and wealth. So my deep gratitude goes to our Burkinabe colleagues who continue working under increasingly difficult conditions, and to our Austrian colleagues who are totally dedicated to the project, and finally to the APEAR team and the other representatives for continuing support. And I also want to thank in advance the ADA for continue to increasing the support, to increase scholarships, and which are actually really urgently needed, as we heard already at the beginning. Because what we achieve here with our APEAR projects is, as we say in Austria, a drop of water on a hot stone. In facing also to mitigate the impacts of the climate change, but also try to mitigate impact of economic and political, I call it, imbalances. And with this, I really want to thank and say, please continue supporting us because each APEAR project is really worth its money. And we are worth your money. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pamela Burger. And our last speaker is coming up soon. Lea Mwaisango came to Austria for her training as part of the ProSoil project. It is a very successful research and teaching project about the meaning and possibilities of social work in Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, and Burundi. I invite Lea to tell us a little bit more about her impressions.
Dear esteemed guest, I'm very honored to be here to speak to you. I am an APEAR scholarship through ProSoil project. And this project is a collaboration of 6 universities. And today, as an APEAR scholar, I'd like to talk about my social or personal life. When Andreas was talking about this great APEAR team, I was like, oh my God, he's going to finish up what I'm going to talk about it today. It's true that this team is very great. Because of this team, you can see me and other APEAR scholars who are here in good health, in good shape, and very intelligent and charming. Being born and raised in Tanzania, before receiving this scholarship, I never visited Austria. I had no idea of what it takes for me to move, to live and start in this foreign country, whereas now I'm supposed to leave behind my family, my children, my colleagues, and my society. But getting this opportunity, I was so much excited for this, and I never regretted, because moving here, I know it wasn't easy, as it involved a lot of procedures, academic procedures, getting visas. I remember, for example, when I was processing my university admission and visa, which I was supposed to go to Nairobi, Kenya, for the process, because in Tanzania we don't have embassy, I was supposed to go twice. First of all, I was supposed to go for legalization of the document, but again, I was supposed to go for the visa processing. As I said, it wasn't easy, but within this process, I was interacting so much with one of their peer staff, but she's not here, Eriki Stinik. And to the extent, always I'm telling my colleagues, like, to the extent I was feeling like this Eriki is just communicating to me only. Because every time, you know, it was frustrated, emails, and, you know, with the German, sometimes you're supposed to translate, you don't understand. But every time I was just pushing some emails, after 2 minutes, Eriki is responding. I was like, wow, what a great person somewhere there just for me. But although it wasn't real easy, but thank you so much, APIA team, for making it possible for us to integrate in this system. Because afterward, even being here, when I came, I had all the documentation, information about what is required to live here. I remember they gave me everything. So it made me easy. And then I left behind my family, but APIA integrated me with other scholarship holders. And I know here the culture, the language, and at a certain time, due to this, you don't know the culture, you don't know the language, you feel so lonely, you feel isolated, and you feel homesick. With this peer enhanced as student with conducive environment, which support us growing academically, intellectually, socially, culturally, our narration, and sometimes which takes us back home, although we are here, but at the same time, as we are connected, we find ourselves connected back home with our people. So it makes it easy for us to live here and to continue with our studies. As Andreas just highlighted here, that the world, we are in a crisis. We have conflicts. We have uncertainty due to whatever reason. But I find it like most of the time it's because we don't understand each other. We don't know about why people are living the way they are living. We don't know about why people are behaving in a certain way. But having this opportunity, whereas together, regardless of our race, regardless of our nationalities, regardless of our gender, we sit down together, we talk, we understand, and at the same time, we leave behind our differences. So this whole process makes it possible for us to have global peace, which is very important aspect of development. Thank you so much, Pia. Thank you so much, OED and ADA. I wish many people would have this chance of integrating with other people. Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much, Leah. I think you and I should repeat something that we've already heard once today, something that Andreas said. Up here is simply the
best.
Yeah. Don't go. So we have come to the end of this first part of today's celebrations. And to say bye, we'll do it the way we did it in the beginning.